This is your AEW Full Gear 2021 review. I am the Solemn Monster here very early on a Sunday morning, November 14, 2021. Full Gear was live in Minneapolis, and it was 16 years ago today. It's worth mentioning because it was also a big point on the show tonight. We saw a lot of tributes on the show tonight. 16 years ago, I guess technically yesterday now, that the wrestling world lost Eddie Guerrero. And I did not want to let this review go by without mentioning this. He died in that very same city, in fact. It was a hotel room in Minneapolis when he passed away in 2005. A lot of wrestlers tonight up and down the card showing him lots of love in multiple matches on this show tonight, and deservedly so. And it never gets old. So gone too soon, but obviously not forgotten. Rest in peace, Eddie Guerrero. Tonight's show will go down as one of the better pay-per-views from any promotion all year. AEW knocked it out of the park tonight. That's coming off what I thought was a very, very strong all-out show back in September. This was, on paper, a very stacked show. Very long show, as the pay-per-views are. They only do four of them a year. But on paper, it was a very strong show coming in. All of the key matches delivered. The most important thing that delivered was the main event. The main event was the two-year story arc. It's been building to this moment for 2 years now, with Hangman Adam Page challenging for the AEW World Championship. Kenny Omega, champion now for 1 year. It all goes back to when Hangman lost to Chris Jericho 2 years ago, and Chris Jericho became the very first AEW World Champion, a spot that Hangman was not ready for at that point. Chris Jericho was the right guy at the right time. It was not Hangman's time. And since then, this whole storyline with Hangman, with the Elite, the tag team with Omega, the breakup, the drinking, the Eliminator last year where Omega lost, him trying to find himself, aligning with the Dark Order, stepping away for a while. Obviously, he and his wife had a kid. Everything that has happened in the last 2 years has built to this moment. And I have been saying for weeks now, this was the time to go ahead and pull the trigger on a Hangman Page title win. Not on television next week or the week after. Don't wait. Don't drag it out until Revolution. Don't drag it out until Double or Nothing. You have to strike at the right time. You don't want to wait too long. Some people would say they already waited too long. But tonight was the right moment, and AEW delivered in that main event. Hangman Page is the new AEW World Champion, the culmination of a long story, and I tweeted this out, and I'll say it again. Don't ever let anybody tell you, because I've already seen people who have left comments on YouTube and have tweeted me. Multiple people have said to me, oh, Solomon, so you know, my issue with AEW is that it's all random matches and no story. Anybody who says that to you, going forward, I want you to show them that main event here tonight. There's probably multiple matches on this show that you can show them. But show them that main event, a two-year story arc playing itself out. And you're going to tell me that there's no stories in AEW? Are there random matches? Sure, of course there are random matches. And then there are stories. And tonight was a great example of that. And it was the right payoff. I was very happy to see Hangman get his moment at the end of the show here tonight. That opening 90-minute stretch, by the way, how they opened the show, three straight 20-minute matches, but the matches that they put out there, that's the best opening 90-minute stretch of any pay-per-view maybe I've ever seen. Now, there is a consequence to that, which is, and I don't know how it was in the building. I've heard from a few people who said the crowd was up all night, but watching, you know, on Bleacher Report here, it felt like we kind of hit a wall during that Falls Count Anywhere match, and the crowd, you know, died down a little bit, because the consequence is that when you just go boom, boom, boom with no break, you know, balls to the wall, those opening three matches, people are going to get tired out. They're going to get burned out. They need to come down before they come back up. And we had a little bit of that here on this show. But that opening 90-minute stretch was outstanding. Hit that thumbs up. Super chats are open. I will be reading all of your messages, however late I may be here doing so. We'll save that for a little bit later, but you'll see them popping up on screen, like that one there from Alvin. And I do appreciate everybody who supports. I also want to say thank you real quick before we get into, I know it's late, but before we get into the review here, I want to say thank you to everybody who sent nice messages and who tuned in on Fight TV last night, or actually went to the show, House of Glory in Queens, New York. First HOG show in 2 years. Myself and JD from New York back on commentary. It felt so good. Will Ospreay, Amazing Red main event. We got another big main event coming up next month, but I'll talk more about that on the podcast tomorrow. So thank you, though, for everybody who tuned in and sent nice messages about House of Glory. It was a great show. Speaking of great shows, let's get into it, shall we? On the buy-in pre-show, and we have some people who are asking, I didn't put a poll up in the live chat, which I could do right now, but I really just want to get into this here. If you want to vote, Twitter is the place to go. My handle's on screen, at Solomonster. You can vote thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, or thumbs down. When we get to the end of the review, we'll see what the poll results are. So no YouTube poll, but you can go on Twitter and vote right now. On the buy-in pre-show, Tony Schiavone interviewed the hometown boy, Dante Martin, who came out and got a nice reaction. On Rampage, Team Taz made an offer to Mr. Martin to join Team Taz. Leo Rush was not there last night. He was tending to family matters. His grandmother recently passed away. Before he could answer what he was going to do, the Acclaim came out. Max Caster rapped to the ring, and one of the lines in his rap was, Leo Rush can't handle this kind of environment. He's about to go into his 15th retirement. I got a laugh out of that. Dante rejected their offer, so he will not be joining Team Taz. That was the whole point of the segment. Send the hometown kid out there, get a nice reaction, and make it very clear that he is not interested in their proposition. And Leo Rush will be back on Dynamite this Wednesday. The pre-show match was Thunder Rosa and Hikaru Shida taking on Nyla Rose and Jamie Hayter. Shida will face Nyla in the next round of the TBS title tournament coming up this week. This was an okay match. Nothing to really have to go back and check out if you missed. Rosa and Shida tried to suplex Nyla at one point. Nyla countered that into a suplex, double suplex to the babyfaces. There was a spot here where Rosa had dodged a charge from Jamie Hayter in the corner, got the tag to Shida. Shida hit a middle rope drop kick to Hayter, took her down. Serena Deeb was in the audience. She was sitting in the front row. They made that a point. Tony Schiavone brought it up, so you knew that it might play into the match at some point. They got the heat on Shida for a long time. There was a brutal-looking backbreaker across the knee, Jamie Hayter's knee, where she slammed Shida. Rosa finally got the hot tag. She hit a Shibata-esque leaping drop kick into the corner on Nyla. Rosa and Shida hit stereo basement drop kicks that sent both the heels outside the ring. Shida then went up, hit a springboard dive off the ropes onto Nyla. Rosa, meanwhile, hit this giant crossbody dive out onto Jamie Hayter on the floor. When Shida got up, she came face-to-face with Serena Deeb. Obviously, these two have had issues in the past. They've had a couple of matches. So they went face-to-face. Meanwhile, Vicky Guerrero caught Shida with a kendo stick shot to the back of her injured knee with her distracted by Serena. Back inside, Hayter hit Shida with a superplex. Nyla followed with a giant frog splash off the top. We saw quite a few frog splashes here on this show. Quite a few. Three Amigos. You would almost think, like, if you were a newer fan, or you were a young fan who never really got to see Eddie Guerrero in his prime, and I'm not even talking, like, mid-2000s WWE right before he passed away. That was not Eddie Guerrero in his prime. Eddie Guerrero in his prime, we're talking, like, mid to late 90s. If you never saw Eddie Guerrero in his prime, you would think the guy only knew two moves, because that's all anybody ever does. Nobody ever does anything else. I mean, I guess those are the moves that are most closely linked to Eddie Guerrero. But Eddie Guerrero did, in fact, have more than two moves, just for the record. I just wanted to make that clear. Nyla went for the Beast Bomb, but Shida countered out of it, sent Nyla into the buckles, and Nyla kind of stumbled backwards into a jackknife cradle, and that gave Rosa and Shida the win. So the match was okay. That stumble by Nyla where she kind of went forward into the buckles didn't look all that great, but the baby faces were over. Thunder Rosa and Hikaru Shida were beloved by the crowd. So the main card opened with MJF one-on-one against Darby Allin. You know, if you're not going on last, you want to go on first. So you're going to have to be in a spot. You're not going to be in the main event. Be in the opener. Make everybody else follow you. These two men went out there. with a mission. With a mission to tell everybody else on this card, follow that. And there were a lot of great matches that followed this, but these two went out there and had a main event caliber match. I thought that this opener was fantastic. Here you have two of the young pillars of this company, or pillows, as Jim Ross called them. At one point, Jim Ross called them the pillows of the company. I mean, I love the pillow that I have. Who doesn't love pillows, right? I hear the MyPillow guy isn't doing so well. Maybe JR is trying to get some help for the MyPillow guy. But MJF forced Justin Roberts to introduce him as the man who can beat Darby Allin with a headlock takeover, Maxwell Jacob Friedman. And keep that in mind because that's going to play into the finish of this match. The intro for Darby was this black and white video of Darby crashing a car. It had the word loser spray painted on it. Then he kind of torched it with a Molotov cocktail. You know, these videos that we see before some of Darby's matches don't make any sense to me. It's just random shit where he's wrecking stuff or wrecking himself. It was, I guess, the typical Darby Allin intro here, but I don't know what the point of this was. Darby came out with Sting, and they shared a fist bump, and Steve, real estate Steve, Sting, call him whatever you want to, he went to the back. I will say this company knows how to open a pay-per-view. One thing that AEW has become known for, I think, on a lot of these shows, a lot of these pay-per-views, is having a really hot opening match. This was a fantastic opener, and I guarantee you that one day, in the not-too-distant future, one day these two men will be sharing the ring in the main event for a championship, for a world championship. This was the opener. One day it will be the main event of an AEW pay-per-view, or maybe multiple AEW pay-per-views. That's why these two guys are two of the biggest shining young stars on the entire roster. And they prove why here tonight. Great opening sequence. They're trading near falls, arm drags, kip-ups, bridges out of holds. You name it, they were doing it. And they got a standing ovation for it. Darby fucking wrecked MJF with a suicide dive through the ropes. I love the Darby Allin dives. Everybody does dives, right? Too many people do dives. But if there were a handful or a couple of people that I would say, if I were, you know, running AEW and I had an edict on dives and I was going to only limit it to like two or three people, Darby Allin would be at the top of my list. Because when he does a dive, and he's a small man, couldn't really do this if you were 300 pounds. He comes shooting through the ropes like a torpedo, and it looks like he is trying to kill his opponent. That's the way it should look. It's not one of these dopey dives where somebody jumps out and you kind of like, they kind of push you. He doesn't do that. He shoots himself out like he's coming out of a cannon, and he tries to take your head off. So it looked great. He just wrecked him with this dive. Darby went to hit the coffin drop on the ring apron, but MJF moved out of the way. Darby crashed and burned, very much like the spot that he did the very first match he ever had couple of years ago with Cody Rhodes, if you remember. Darby did a coffin drop on the apron, Cody moved, and Darby, he bounced, and he fell down on the floor. That's what that reminded me of. Back inside, MJF hit a pair of backbreakers. He was selling his own knee on the second one, like Darby's weight, you know, tweaked his knee maybe. Even the selling, I thought, was on point in this match from both men, but especially MJF. He was selling the crap out of that knee, and that he may have tweaked it. MJF teased a tombstone from the middle rope on the inside, but Darby hit his over-the-shoulder stunner from the middle rope. And Darby set up a second time now, trying to go for the coffin drop. MJF rolled out of the way, and he countered a Rana attempt with a backbreaker out of a powerbomb position. I mean, the back and forth between these two guys, I thought was just fantastic. So at one point, MJF put on the Scorpion Deathlock, right? Very appropriate. Sting wasn't at ringside, but he locks on Sting's finishing hold on MJF. Darby counters out of it and locks on the figure four leg lock. MJF reverses the pressure. Darby gets to the ropes to break the hold. Both men are out on the apron. MJF hits a jumping tombstone pile driver on the ring apron to Darby Allin. And he's screaming and selling his own knee. The selling of the knee continues here. MJF realizes that he came down on his own knee. Fuck, it hurts. And so both men tumble down to the floor. He gets back inside. Darby barely beats the 10 count back into the ring. And again, more near falls, trading back and forth between these two. Darby hit a code red, went for the coffin drop again. This time MJF rolled to the floor. So he hit the coffin drop to MJF on the floor. Back inside, Darby went for the coffin drop again. MJF got the knees up. Here comes Wardlow and Sean Spears. And they're sauntering on down to the ring, but behind them is Sting. And Sting has his baseball bat, and he's beaten on the heels, and basically took out the members of the Pinnacle. So they were a non-factor in this match. Wardlow was a non-factor in this match. Sean Spears is always a non-factor. Back inside, MJF grabs Darby's skateboard. And he slides the skateboard over, and he's basically taunting him. He wants him to use the skateboard because he wants Darby to be disqualified. And Darby teases it, he considers it, but then he thinks better of it. And the referee goes to remove the skateboard from the ring. As he is doing that, MJF reaches down, I don't know, he's scratching his crotch, he's jerking off, whatever it is that he's doing, he pulls out the Dynamite Diamond ring. And he puts the ring on, and he blasts Darby right in the face with it, knocks him out. And it wasn't enough to just knock him out and pin him. This goes back to the announcement at the beginning of the match. This goes back to his promo from TV, where he said, I could beat you with a standing headlock takeover. Right? So he blasts him with the ring, and what does MJF do? He takes Darby Allin over with the side headlock takeover, and he gets the pinfall. Even though Darby's shoulder, the camera angle clearly showed that Darby's shoulders, or at least one of them, was not down on the mat. But aside from that little snafu, I thought that was tremendous. You know, he said that he could beat him with a headlock takeover. That's exactly what he did. A tremendous match in every way, I think, from the action to the story to the selling. And again, I don't want to hear anybody say to me, as people have before, and I think it's less of a thing now in light of the matches that MJF has had with people like Sammy Guevara and with Jungle Boy, I think opened up a lot of eyes about how good he really is in the ring. I don't want to hear from anybody who says, you know, MJF, my God, he's this great talker, but, you know, he's an okay wrestler, or, you know, I wish, you know, he can't really back it up in the ring like some of the other guys on the roster can, but man, on the mic, he's second to none. Well, he's second to none on the mic, and he can back it up in the ring too, which is why when his contract comes up for expiration, whenever that may be, whether it's next year or the year after that, he's going to make a lot of money. Whether he stays in AEW or he goes somewhere else, he's going to make a lot of money because he could do it all. He's a fantastic heel. Whether he likes it or not, one day he's going to make for a great babyface. Because all the great heels make for great babyfaces at some point. You wait long enough, the crowd is going to just turn you into one, whether you like it or not. That's what happened with Steve Austin many years ago. He didn't want to become a babyface. The crowd turned him babyface. The same thing will eventually happen with MJF. But he can talk, he can work, he gets heat, he checks all the boxes. That's why they talk about him as one of these young pillars of the company, and he will be the world champion one day. When that is, who knows? Next year at some point, maybe MJF is the one to take that title away from Hangman Page. But I thought what these two went out there and did was excellent. Both guys lost it all out. So someone had to lose here and someone had to win. MJF, with the win, now that we have a babyface champion, is perfectly set up to challenge for the title at some point in the next few months. You know, we could be looking at a Revolution main event or a Double or Nothing main event of Hangman Page against MJF of the World Championship. But whoever followed this match was going to have an uphill battle in front of them, and the four men who came next were more than up for the challenge because they followed this match up with the Lucha Bros defending their AEW tag team titles against the AAA Tag Team Champions, FTR, Cash Wheeler, Dax Harwood. The Lucha Bros, at one point, piled up the members of FTR in the corner. We had Dax, who was down in the corner. We had Cash Wheeler hanging upside down in the Tree of Woe. And Penta monkey-flipped Rey Fénix into both of them. Wheeler tied Penta's mask to the bottom rope. Now, we've seen that spot before. I'm pretty sure they did that spot in the cage match, I think, with the Lucha Bros and the Young Bucks. But he tied his mask to the bottom rope. Harwood kicked him in the head until referee Rick Knox finally freed Penta from the ropes. Match slowed down a little bit. FTR was working over Penta. Penta backdropped Harwood out of a pile driver attempt, hit him with a DDT. Got the hot tag to Rey Fénix, and Fénix hit both members of FTR with a cutter at the same time. Wheeler hit Fénix with the AAA title belt. Harwood then hit the Brainbuster. So that was a nice little near-fall tease there. Fénix kicked out at two. So you know what I liked about that also? They were teasing that the match might end there. Similar finish to what we got in the opener, with the heel using a foreign object to knock out his opponent and get the win. So they wanted you to believe they were going to do the same finish back-to-back matches, but he kicked out. FTR went for the big rig. Fénix made a blind tag to Penta. Tully Blanchard tripped up Penta. And the distraction set up Harwood to hit the Three Amigos on Penta, who countered the third suplex. He didn't quite get the third amigo, and instead it was Penta who hit the Three Amigos, completed the trifecta, followed by a giant frog splash by Rey Fénix for a great near fall. Trying to say, who has the better frog splash? Is it Rey Fénix or is it Montez Ford? Rey Fénix is a freak, but I probably would go Montez Ford on that. Lucha Bros went for the Fear Factor. Wheeler broke it up. FTR hit the spike pile driver on Rey Fénix for another near fall. Fénix countered an assisted Brainbuster with a small package for two. Lucha Bros went for the Fear Factor again. Fénix sprung over Penta and onto Harwood with a crossbody. Champions, though, only get a near fall. The AEW Tag Team Champions. I guess I have to specify here. The AAA Tag Team Champions are the challengers in this match. Wheeler was the illegal man, and he comes back into the ring wearing his Ninja Turtle mask. This is the green Super Rana's Lucha mask from a few weeks ago on TV when they won the AAA tag belts, I believe. So he puts this mask on, I guess so the referee doesn't realize which member of FTR it is and doesn't know that Wheeler is the illegal man. Because at first I'm like, why the fuck is he wearing this stupid mask for? So I'm assuming he just didn't want the referee to know that he was the illegal man. He tried to get the pin with his feet on the ropes, and referee Rick Knox noticed it. Finally, Rick Knox does his job for a change. He actually does his job and realizes, oh, this guy has his feet on the ropes. Perhaps I should stop counting here and get this man out of here. Lucha Bros hit their own stuff pile driver on Wheeler. Penta got the pin. So they pinned the illegal man to retain the AEW tag team titles. I was not a fan of this finish. Clearly it was designed that way because this is going to continue. It's going to lead to a rematch. I'm sure FTR will be on television this Wednesday complaining about the fact that this is not fair. The illegal man was pinned. Therefore, we should get a rematch for the tag team titles. Maybe how this all ends is we get a winner-take-all match. Because I can't imagine FTR, the long-term plan is for them to be the AAA Tag Team Champions. So maybe if they want their rematch, Alex and Penta and Fénix say, well, I'll tell you what, we'll give you your rematch, but you got to put your belt on the line too. Maybe in a ladder match or some kind of stipulation match, and we get winner-take-all and the Lucha Bros win their belts back. I could see it playing out that way. So not a fan really of how they did that finish, but the feud is going to go on. The action that came before it, though, I thought was excellent. So right out of the gate, from the main card, we were 2 for 2. The first hour of this show was fantastic. And how do you follow up a fantastic first hour of this pay-per-view? Well, you follow it up with the world title eliminator final involving one of the best wrestlers on the entire planet. The American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, third match here on this show. That's how deep this card was. You have Bryan Danielson in match number 3 on this show to determine who would be the number one contender for the AEW World Championship. Bryan Danielson one-on-one against Miro. Yeah, I was thinking, as great as the first, because this match also went about 20 minutes, and so that pretty much covered the first 80 to 90 minutes of the show. I'd be hard-pressed to find another pay-per-view with a better 90-minute stretch. The only thing I could think of is we had some great NXT takeovers. Rest in peace, NXT TakeOver. May it rest in peace. But there have been some great NXT TakeOver shows. Maybe there have been some, but even on those shows, you have like that filler match or a Baron Corbin match or something. So this opening stretch was great, but we did get to a point where it was like, all right, we're getting a little tired out here. But not here. This was a different Danielson match than we have seen from him so far in AEW. This was really more of like a brawling Miro style of a match. Danielson can pretty much work any kind of match you want him to work. He can work a brawl. He can work a straight wrestling match. He can work, you know, the really technical stuff. He's just great at what he does. And this was more of a, I would say, a Miro type of match. And it worked great. I thought it was a very good match. Danielson went for a tornado DDT. Miro avoided it, hit a hard shoulder tackle. And Brian came back, flying clothesline, dropkick Miro to the floor. Danielson went for a plancha, but Miro caught him with a forearm and then gave Danielson a belly-to-belly suplex on the floor. Miro tossed Danielson into the barricade, tossed him into the ring steps. Danielson mounted a comeback until Miro caught him with a fallaway slam for a near fall. Fight went out to the floor. Danielson sent Miro into the ring post and then came off the ring apron with the running flying knee. Back inside, Danielson hit a top row missile dropkick, and he is, at this point, pulverizing Miro with kicks. Miro blocked the last kick. Danielson, though, turned that into a sunset flip, rolled through into a knee bar, and Miro almost tapped out, but he powered out of it into a German deadlift German. Miro locked in the game over submission. Now, I don't know, offhand, once he has locked on the hold, it's been a pretty protected finishing hold. Right, not as protected as the One-Winged Angel, which still has not been kicked out of, by the way, in this company, not counting New Japan. But I don't know if anybody else has gotten out of the game over. I mean, maybe Sammy did. Maybe Sammy did in their TNT title match. I thought for a second that, you know, Danielson was going to tap, and they were going to give Miro the win, just because I thought if the babyface is going over in the title match, it sets up Miro as a strong first heel challenger for Hangman. So I bought into the idea that Danielson might do the honors for Miro here in this spot, even though Miro was not originally supposed to be in this match. It was supposed to be Jon Moxley. But he got out of it. And Miro locked the hold on again. Danielson, though, rolled through, locked on the label lock. Miro powered out. He starts pummeling Danielson with forearms. And Danielson went after Miro with forearms of his own, and he's just absorbing them. He's like basically waving it at Danielson to just, come on, you know, give me the kicks. Give me what you got here. And he is firing away with kicks to the chest. He hit Miro with a spinning DDT for the finish. He hit him with a spinning DDT off the top rope that looked like it didn't quite land the way that he wanted. That landing on that DDT looked a little wonky. It didn't look great. But he hit the DDT and immediately locked on the guillotine. And Miro was out right away, at least according to the referee, because she waved the match off immediately. So I almost feel like they went to the finish a little too quick. Maybe give it a few more seconds, but Miro was out, and Aubrey Edwards calls for the bell. I love how the story is still that Miro's neck, right? That was the whole story when he was the TNT champion. He was wrestling Eddie Kingston. His head, his neck. If you drop him on it, that's his Achilles heel. That's his big weakness. I like how they're still telling that story. It was reflected here in the finish of this match. So Danielson is the new number one contender for the AEW World Championship. And he wins another one with a unique finish. Unique from every other match that he has had so far in AEW. Every single match, every single finish has been different than the one that came before. And again, a very good match. His streak of very good matches here in this company continues. That made three straight 20-minute matches here to open the show, and that brought us to the Young Bucks and Adam Cole against Jurassic Express and Christian Cage. All the heels decked out in pink, all the baby faces wearing blue jeans, falls count anywhere in the building. I want to just break here for a second to welcome all of our live viewers here, all 1,700 plus and growing here on a very late night. I am happy that you are joining me and choosing me for your Full Gear coverage here tonight. Do me a favor, if you would be so kind. We've got well over 300 likes. We could do better. We've got almost 2,000 people in here. Just hit that like button. It helps the video out a great deal when you do so. This is where I started to tire out a little bit. And it sounds like the crowd did too. Again, maybe the people who were in the building will say differently, but that's what happens when you it's a good problem to have, I guess, when you're just rolling from one great match to the next. They say you can't have too much of a good thing. Well, you can. That's what happens when you throw so much good shit at us all at once. This was Texas Tornado style, so just complete chaos. You know, as a Falls Count Anywhere match, no disqualification should be, right? Jungle Boy hit a pair of dives out of the ring onto Adam Cole on the floor. Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy sent Cole headfirst into a chair. And Adam Cole came up bloody. Not the only person who would bleed here on this show. I think it was three different matches, actually, including the main event. Hangman Page also got busted open on the top of his head. So Cole came up bloody. Christian Cage and Nick Jackson, they brawled down the ramp, off to the side somewhere in the back of the building. Hey, Simi Valley just became a Sound of Legend, one of our channel members. Shout out to Simi. Thank you, sir. Anytime you see Beavis rocking out there on your screen, that means we have a new channel member. So they brawl to the off into the building somewhere. We don't know where they went. And Jungle Boy catches Adam Cole with a Hurricane Rana. This was a great spot. I actually love this spot. It's my favorite spot of the match. So Jungle Boy leaps over the top rope. Adam Cole is on the ring apron. He jumps over the top rope onto Cole's shoulders, takes him over with a Rana down through a table that had been set up outside the ring, and Cole just took this perfect bump right through the table. I thought that just looked great. Matt Jackson immediately, not to be outshined here, we can't have the Young Bucks feeling as if they're outshined, but Matt Jackson immediately follows that by dropping a very Shawn Michaels-esque elbow off the top rope onto Luchasaurus, who is on a table, another table, out on the floor. I think Tony Schiavone said very Randy Savage-esque. This was not a Randy Savage elbow. This was if you watch it back, this was clearly a Shawn Michaels elbow, and a very good one at that. I will give him a 10 out of 10 on form. It looked very good. Back to the other side of the arena, we catch up with Christian and Nick Jackson. They're brawling. Brandon Cutler tries to use the cold spray on Christian, but he misses. And he sprays Nick Jackson in the eyes by accident. That then led to a balcony dive from Christian Cage out onto Nick and Cutler, and Michael Nakazawa was out there as well. Christian Cage. Let's talk about Christian Cage here for a second. Christian Cage went from a 7-year retirement to becoming the Impact World Champion while working for another company to doing balcony dives after his career was over and he was sitting on the sidelines for 7 years. That's quite the comeback story for Christian Cage. He's out there acting like fucking New Jack, doing balcony dives. Back at ringside, Adam Cole used a wheelbarrow suplex to send Jungle Boy backwards, back first, right into the ring apron, right on the edge of the ring. The Bucks pulled out a sack full of thumbtacks, stuffed a bunch of them in Jungle Boy's mouth in the ring, and Cole and the Bucks did the whole camel clutch spot. The Bucks go back and forth, they hit the ropes, and then they give Cole the kiss on the cheek, and then the double super kick to Jungle Boy with a mouthful of thumbtacks. They had a ladder that was brought into the ring, and it was propped up in the corner of the ring. And Christian hit a spinning DDT onto the ladder. Cole took an electric chair drop backwards by Luchasaurus. That looked like it sucked to take that bump on the ladder. Luchasaurus chokeslammed Nick Jackson onto the ladder. He chased Matt Jackson up the ramp. Jungle Boy, though, was waiting for him. Matt Jackson thought he was getting the hell out of Dodge. He runs into Jungle Boy, who takes him down and puts on the snare trap submission. He's got him locked in the snare trap. Cole, though, broke it up. So they're still on the ramp now. Christian goes for a kill switch. The Bucks break it up. Adam Cole hits Jungle Boy with a Panama Sunrise on the entrance stage. Yeah, they had the what do you even call it? The truss or the lighting rig or whatever. Cole couldn't climb too high up because the set was sort of obstructing it, you know, the Full Gear logo and everything, but he climbed up a little bit, and then he came down, hit the Panama Sunrise on the stage. And then it's almost Christmas time, right? What's today? November 14th. All right, so we're about 6 weeks out from Christmas. Santa Cole. He didn't bring coal in people's stockings. Santa Cole brought gifts for he and his friends. And what he brought out here were thumbtack knee pads for himself and for the Bucks. So they put the thumbtack knee pads on. They hit a three-way BTE trigger with the thumbtack knee pads to Luchasaurus. Jungle Boy breaks up the pin attempt. Somewhere in here, and it might have been that spot, Jim Ross was just done with this match. Jim Ross was like, just end this already. It's like, what? The heels are going for the win. You should want the babyface. You should want Jungle Jack to come and make a big comeback. And Jim Ross was like, just let it be over. Well, it wasn't over. Even though this man took three thumbtack knees to the head, Jungle Boy broke it up. So Luchasaurus ended up chokeslamming Nick Jackson off the stage onto all the stooges down below and then hit a standing shooting star press onto the pile. On the ramp, Christian set up Matt Jackson for the concerto, but Jungle Boy stopped him. He wanted to do it himself. And Christian handed him the chair, and he said, good luck, and he walked off, and Jungle Boy took his time. He took a deep breath, and he hit the one-man concerto to Matt Jackson, and he got the pin and the win for his team. Jungle Boy, another one of the young pillars of AEW. We talk about MJF, and we talk about Darby. We talk about Sammy. Talk about Hangman Page. You can't have that conversation without talking about Jungle Boy. This was a very satisfying win. Obviously, he has been fucked around with now for quite a while by the Bucks and the Elite on TV. So it was a satisfying win. I think this would have benefited from shaving off about 10 minutes, though. I think this went way too long. I thought this match went too long. I think this would have benefited. You shave off a good 8 to 10 minutes from this match. It would have still been an excellent match. Yeah, I think it would have been an even better match, frankly, had they done that. I just thought it dragged on longer than it had to, but still very good stuff. So we had Cody Rhodes and Pac against Andrade El Idolo and Malakai Black. Very excited. I'm going to get to call my first Malakai Black match against the Amazing Red next month at House of Glory. The House of Glory becomes the House of Black on December 11th. I can't wait. But he was tagging with Andrade tonight. There was a sign in the front row. I love this. I wish I would have clipped it. There was a sign in the front row. Somebody had it draped right over the front barricade saying, Cody solved racism. So if you didn't know, everybody, if you didn't know, now you know. Cody Rhodes solved racism. Pac was about to get things started with Andrade when Cody tagged himself in, and the crowd did not like that at all. When Cody tagged himself in, the Boo Birds came out for Cody. Well, the Boo Birds were already out when he made his entrance. Minneapolis was not a Cody city. It was not a Cody town. So they didn't like it when Cody tagged himself into the ring. So, Pac gets out onto the apron, but then Pac tags himself back in. Everybody cheered. Pac got worked over in the corner by the heels. Andrade and Malakai, they were also teasing issues. They were not also on the same page here. So, even though there was a little bit of friction tease with Cody and Pac, we had the same thing on the heel side as well. Dissension between tag team partners. There's something we haven't seen any of on wrestling television recently. Can they coexist? Nobody gets along with each other anymore. How come we can't get along? Can't we all just get along? Why does everybody have to have issues with each other? Nobody trusts anybody in this industry. Everybody's just stabbing people in the back. What a fucked up industry to work in. Can they coexist? Well, they did here on this show, but barely. Cody got the tag. He hit the Cody Cutter on Malakai. He teased the pedigree, but he got rocked by a spin kick from Malakai Black. Pac hit an acai moonsault on Black and Andrade out on the floor. Andrade's assistant, Jose, decided that with everybody down, Now would be a good time to go fuck with Arn Anderson. There's never a good time to fuck with Arn Anderson. And Arn, he cocked the gun. He did the motion. And he nailed Jose with a right hand. And basically chased him to the back. I mean, if slow walking is considered chasing, like Michael Myers, I guess it is. He stalked him. Arn stalked Jose all the way to the back and got him out of there. And that was the last I think we saw of either of them. Andrade hit a tornillo dive to the floor on Pac. Cody was still on the floor selling that spin kick from earlier. Pac, at one point, is looking for the tag. He's got no partner. And the people realize that Pac needs this tag. His partner is not there for him. They start booing Cody even more. Because Cody's on the outside. He's like, oh, you know, I need a few more minutes here. Cody wasn't ready yet. Andrade hit a split-legged moonsault for a near fall. Pac made a comeback, went for the tag. And Cody was still selling on the floor. Pac caught Black with a super kick, and Cody finally did get back into the match. He got the tag. He ran wild for a little bit. Andrade went for a figure four. Cody countered and locked on one of his own. Pac tagged in, hit a 450 splash on Andrade while Cody still had him in the figure four. Pac comes down with this 450. Only, though, gets a two count. Pac goes for a plancha on the floor on Malachi, but Malachi pulls Cody in the way, and he takes the shot from Pac. Pac lands right on his partner. Dissension in the ranks here. Not good. Back in the ring, Cody suplexed Black to the floor. They both tumbled out over the top at the same time. Back inside, Andrade went for the hammerlock DDT. Pac, though, countered, suplexed him into the buckles. Pac hit a poison Rana. And finally hit the Black Arrow on Andrade for the win. This was a well-worked match, but it just felt to me like something was missing. It never really reached that next... You know, for a pay-per-view called Full Gear, it never reached Full Gear. I just felt like I was expecting something to happen here. The fact that they didn't just do this on TV, it felt like it was added to the show. I thought there was a purpose to it. I thought there would be some kind of big angle or a turn or something was going to happen here to further things along in this match, or something with Malachi or Cody or Arn, and nothing happened. So I thought this would have been a fine television match. They could have had this even as a main event on an episode of Dynamite. I just don't know, having now seen it on a card that was as full and as stacked as this one was going all the way to midnight, I don't know that this really, outside of just wanting to get these four guys on the show, And certainly Malachi, at least, deserves to be on the show in some kind of role. But I don't know that this match really had to be part of the show. Just never really rose to that that level that I thought it would get to. Hey, Jared M., shout out to him. He's been a channel member for 7 months. And he is hopeful that this is just the beginning of Mr. Punk and Mr. Kingston, who we're going to get to talk about here in a little bit. Britt Baker, one-on-one against Ty Conti for the AEW Women's Championship. Britt Baker got the live music treatment here on this show. She got the live entrance with Rich Ward of Fozzy, who played her down to the ring. Baker got a near fall with a fisherman's neck breaker, went for the lockjaw. Conti escaped, and she hit a trifecta of pump kicks in the corner to the champ. Came off the top with a crossbody for a near fall. Britt rolled through a suplex attempt and hit a curb stomp. She got the glove, which is her preparation for lockjaw, but Conti hit a cutter for a near fall. They brawled out onto the apron. Conti went for the gotch-style pile driver, thinking she's fucking Minoru Suzuki out here. She's trying to go for the gotch. But Baker countered with an air raid crash. She gave this woman an air raid crash on the apron. Back in the ring, Baker went for the lockjaw. Conti, though, made the ropes. Ty Conti hit the Ty KO for a near fall. And then she hit the gotch-style pile driver for another near fall. Rebel distracted the referee while Jamie Hayter pulled Conti out of the ring, threw her into the ring steps. And with her over by the ring steps, Britt Baker came out onto the apron. She gave her a curb stomp on the ring steps. Back inside, Britt went for the lockjaw. Conti, though, countered. They wound up kind of tangled up in the ropes a little bit. And Conti hit a pump kick that sent Britt out to the floor. Ty Conti then hit what I would describe as one of these Charlotte Flair moonsaults, which is not really meant as a compliment. Charlotte Flair does a pretty cool twisting moonsault on occasion, like in a big pay-per-view match, but when she hits the standard moonsault, it looks like shit. Looks like absolute shit. I wouldn't say this looked like absolute shit, but she kind of over-rotated. That's why I call it a Charlotte Flair moonsault on the floor. She wiped out Rebel and Jamie Hayter, but Britt Baker avoided it. Conti, though, caught her after that and gave her a spinning uranage on the floor. Inside, Ty hit the DD tie for two and went for a second one, but Baker countered into a lockjaw attempt. And Conti reversed that into a cradle, but then Britt Baker reversed that into a cradle of her own, and she put all of her weight forward on Ty Conti so she could not kick out, and she got the three count. The match had some weak-looking spots, but I will say, Ty Conti went out there on this show, and she wrestled the best match of her entire life. This was the best match of her career against Britt Baker tonight. She is the real deal. It just wasn't her time. I have said it over and over and over again. Britt Baker should not be losing the championship, at least until she gets back in the ring with Thunder Rosa. Until that happens, she should not be losing the championship. But Ty Conti has nothing to be ashamed of here. This was the best match I've ever seen her in anywhere. She was in the NXT system. They let her go. She came to AEW. They scooped her up. That was a big loss for them. She could have been someone who I think they could have easily plugged into the women's division on Raw or SmackDown. Again, she's only gotten better since she was in the WWE system. And I know it was very frustrating for her to be in that system. But she has grown a great deal since then. And don't tell me that she wouldn't be a great piece to add to either of those rosters. And so she's on the AEW women's roster instead. And I think she's a good part of that roster. I could see her as a TBS champion next year, but not the women's champion. We had CM Punk one-on-one against Eddie Kingston. One of the matches I was most looking forward to here on this show. The video package to build this matchup was tremendous. The in-ring promo on Rampage a couple of weeks ago that set this whole thing in motion was just fantastic. This also was the match that woke the crowd up. I thought this was excellent. Punk was donning MMA-style, boxer shorts, it looked like, in this match. Right before the match even... It was either right before the bell, or... I'm trying to remember now if the bell had already rung, or this might have been before the bell. Before the bell even rang, Kingston nailed Punk with the spinning back fist and knocked him out. And I thought, they can't end it like this. People are going to rebel. If you don't give them an actual match, they're not going to be very happy. Generally speaking, when it comes to these sort of things, I think Tony Khan is smart enough. He's very cognizant of what his audience wants. So he would not have pulled that bait and switch by not giving people an actual match. Unless there was an injury or something and Punk couldn't wrestle. But for a moment there, he was just out cold. Flat on his face. It took a while. Eventually he woke up and the referee called for the bell and then the match began. Punk hit the running knee in the corner. Kingston came back with an exploder suplex. Crowd was booing. At one point, Punk had him mounted. He was raining blows down on Eddie Kingston, and the crowd was booing. And I said, Eddie Kingston is so good. He's the first man since Punk came to the company and returned to wrestling back in August who got the audience to boo CM Punk because they like Eddie Kingston that much. How can you not like Eddie Kingston after that article that he wrote? Or dictated, whoever actually wrote it. I don't know if he actually wrote it himself or he dictated it to someone, but that article, and I told you, the Players Tribune website, if you live under a rock and you haven't heard about this article, you need to go read it. It's fantastic. It's just this essay from his point of view about his life, about his career and his struggles and where he is today. It's raw, it's real, and that's what Eddie Kingston is all about. He's real. Everything he says on television, whether it's just a put-on for a storyline, you don't know. Because he comes across as the genuine article. And when you read that article, how could anybody vote against this guy? How can anybody root for anyone other than Eddie Kingston? So, if anything, that only won him even more fans. So, the crowd was, not booing CM Punk like they were Cody, like, we fucking hate you, go away. booing him the whole match, but he got a good part of the crowd to boo CM Punk. So Punk got poked in the eye by Kingston at one point. He sent Punk into the ring post outside, and Punk got busted open, and he was bleeding a gusher. His entire forehead covered in blood. So what does Eddie Kingston do? He smears the blood on his own face, because of course he does. Kingston goes for a pile driver on the floor. Punk backdropped out of it. Punk hit Kingston with a flying clothesline off the ring apron. Back inside, Punk hit the old back suplex that John Cena used to do. He was in the position. He put his hand up in the air. Punk puts his hand up in the air. People knew what he was about to do, and they booed him like you wouldn't believe because they thought that CM Punk was going for the five-knuckle shuffle. And I think it was Eddie Kingston did a podcast interview, maybe. I think it was. And talked about the fact that in that promo battle, when they were going back and forth, that whole work shoot thing on Rampage a few weeks ago, there was an intentional play off of the John Cena-CM Punk feud from 2011. Only now it was Punk in the role of Cena and Eddie in the role of Punk. So obviously they were really feeding into that here in this match. I mean, these guys know what they're doing. And he was teasing it like he was about to go for that five-knuckle shuffle and the crowd was about to lose their shit. But instead, he looked down at Kingston and flipped him off. Eddie flipped him right back. And crowd was electric for this. Like I said, this is the match here that woke this crowd up. Because they died down a little bit there in the Falls Count Anywhere in the women's match. And they came way back up here for this. Punk hit the Three Amigos. Went to the top. Kingston caught him and delivered a superplex. Kingston was signaling for the GTS, but Punk caught Eddie with the GTS instead. Punk was too out of it to go for the immediate cover, and Eddie landed by the ropes anyway, so he didn't win with it there in that spot. Kingston came back. He went for the spinning back fist. Punk dodged it, hit a second GTS, and finally got the pin. After the match, Punk went for a handshake. Kingston left him hanging, though, and he just walked out. This was a dogfight, and it was the perfect length. It didn't overstay its welcome. They went out there, and unlike every other match, except maybe the women's match that came before this, and that went about 15 minutes, every other match was like 20-plus. These guys went out there, and in about 11 minutes, they went out there, and they took it to each other. They had themselves a knockdown, drag-out brawl. Punk picked up the win. I know there's people, I even saw some people earlier here in the chat, who think the wrong man won. One of these days, Eddie Kingston is going to win that big, elusive match. He's won some matches, but I mean like that big singles win that he really hasn't had yet. It will happen for him at some point. Tonight was not his night. But when it happens, the world will rejoice. You know, I don't know when Jon Moxley is going to be back. Obviously, he should take all the time he needs. They're not going to rush him back. When he's ready to come back, he'll come back. What I figured this was all building to was possibly a Moxley win here on this show against Bryan Danielson. But coming out of this show, more of a heel Moxley and a heel Kingston. And I think if they're setting up for another Winter is Coming type of special episode of Dynamite next month, which I would imagine they probably are, I don't know if they're going to call it Winter is Coming again. But I figured on that show, they could be setting up for a CM Punk, Bryan Danielson tag team, taking on Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley. We still could get that match. I'm hopeful that we'll still get that match. I don't know where their plans were going to take them. Tony Khan said that what happened with Moxley did change up a whole bunch of plans that they had. Depending on when he's ready to come back, I'm still hopeful that maybe we'll get that tag team match. But whether we get a tag team or a singles match, this ain't over. I don't believe. Between CM Punk and Eddie Kingston. I don't think the fans want it to be over. I don't think the fans would mind if they got in the ring and had one more match. I hope they do. I hope they do. And I also think that CM Punk might win that match as well. But Eddie will get his big win at some point. Tonight was not his night. But he was definitely loved by the people in this building here on this show. So the Inner Circle, we're out next for a match against the Men of the Year, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, along with American Top Team. This was the Minneapolis Street Fight. For the match, they introduced at ringside in the front row the Master of the Claw. The Claw. The Master of the Claw himself, the legendary Baron Von Raschke, who was very well known in the Twin Cities. Of course, they were in Minneapolis tonight. So a lot of Baron Von Raschke fans in the crowd. 81 years old. This guy showed more charisma in this one little segment where he grabbed his hand and went, "Arr," and did the claw. He showed more charisma than a lot of wrestlers more than half his age do on television today. This guy was great. 81 years old. God bless the Baron. Glad to see him doing well. No idea, by the way, when this match started. No idea why they were following normal tag team match rules here. This was a Minneapolis street fight. And when this match started, they were following... And really, throughout the match, they were following regular tag team rules where you had to be out on the apron, two men in the ring at once, waiting on the apron for the tag. Fuck are you doing? I'm watching this thinking, boy, this is very dumb. Now, if the reason they did that is because, you know, they wanted to avoid this being too similar to the Young Bucks match earlier in the show, well, then, you know what? Don't book two street fights on the same show. Andre Arlovsky made his pro wrestling debut here. And he brawled with Jake Hager. He looked okay. Junior Dos Santos, though, looked really good. He seems to be a natural. He's always got this big smile on his face, too. So he looks like he's having a lot of fun. But he seems more of a natural at this. He power slammed and suplexed Chris Jericho. Hit a standing moonsault for a near fall. Almost landed on his head. He's thinking he's Luchasaurus in there. But he tried. And it didn't look half bad. He hit a standing moonsault. Dan Lambert got the tag. Once he realized that Jericho was down and Jericho was in trouble, he got the tag. He was acting all cocky until Jericho fought back. All the members of both teams at that point piled into the ring for a giant brawl. Jericho chased Lambert around the ring. Ethan Page hit him with a hockey stick. Sammy Guevara hit a spinning tope out of the ring, out onto Ethan Page. Santana and Ortiz followed with dives of their own. Jake Hager, not wanting to feel left out, came off the top rope with a big dive out onto the pile. Everybody dives. Lance Archer says everybody dies. It's not everybody dies. It's everybody dives in AEW. And WWE. As if AEW is the only promotion where everybody does a fucking dive. Let's be honest. It's infected every promotion pretty much in the country at this point. But yes, everybody dives. Excalibur took some time here to finally clarify exactly what makes this a Minneapolis street fight. I was asking that question on my stream last week. It's a Minneapolis street fight. All right, well, other than the fact that they're in Minneapolis, what exactly makes a Minneapolis street fight different than a Chicago street fight or a New York City street fight? I would love to know. Excalibur said, all of the weapons and the plunder around ringside is from Minnesota. There was a Prince sign. I'm not talking about Devitt. I'm talking about Prince. They were in Minnesota. This giant Prince symbol, like a cardboard sign, the Prince symbol. Jericho picks it up. He starts using it as a weapon. Got a chant going of Purple Rain. Crowd started chanting Purple Rain. Santana and Ortiz tied up Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky in the ring with stereo submissions. That was a very cool looking spot, cool visual. Hager used a toaster. Jericho used a snowboard. I think it was a snowboard. Hager started beating on guys with a cake pan. Tony Schiavone was giving us the history of the cake pan. Santana and Ortiz hit a double superplex on Junior Dos Santos. Sammy Guevara climbed up this ridiculously, like, 20-foot fucking ladder outside the ring. There's a table set up down below. And Sammy climbs up to the very top, I mean, the very top of this ladder. Think Shawn Michaels, SummerSlam 95, all right? Coming off the very top of the ladder down onto Razor Ramon. That big diving splash that missed. Or Jeff Hardy at WrestleMania. Sammy's on top of the ladder. He hits a Swanton Bomb all the way down onto Scorpio Sky through a table. Ethan Page goes over to this woman in the front row who happened, I don't know if she was identified, but that was Jake Hager's wife. And so he goes over to Jake Hager's wife and he's talking shit to her. And Jake Hager's wife just so happens to be standing next to the Baron. No wonder they show Baron von Raschke on camera earlier. It was an angle alert. He's next to her. He sees what's going on, and he doesn't like what Ethan Page is saying to this woman, and so he puts the claw on Ethan Page, and everybody pops. So that was a fun little spot. Dan Lambert now is left in the ring all alone by himself, and he's posing. He's like, look, everybody's gone. I'm the last man standing. And in the background, you see Jericho sneak into the ring. And Jericho knocks him down. He goes for the lion salt. This was the worst part of this match. This was awful. So the idea with this spot, and you know, look, you cut the guy some slack because he's not a real wrestler. But when you have these people that don't have a lot of experience, or you're dealing with these celebrities, sometimes this kind of shit is going to happen because you're not dealing with people who are used to doing this for a living. The idea was that Lambert is down. Jericho is going to hit the ropes for a lion salt, but Junior Dos Santos is going to be there, and he's going to hit him and knock Jericho off the ropes. Well, Jericho goes for the lion salt, and he has to hold himself on the ropes. He has to hold the position and basically say, I forgot he said Dos Santos, he said Junior. He was telling him, get the fuck up on the apron, basically. Dos Santos was out of position. He was late. So Jericho looks like a fucking idiot now because he's got to just stand there and wait and feed himself into this shot so he could take the bump and then fall backwards. This looked fucking awful. This is terrible. And it's not Jericho's fault. But this did not look good. Lambert got a near fall out of it. Jericho found a kendo stick. He whacked Lambert with it a few times. Then he found a stapler, and he stapled Lambert in the crotch. Came off the top rope with a frog splash of his own in another tribute to Eddie Guerrero, and he got the pin. And Jericho was very emotional when the match was over. You could see it in his eyes. He had tears in his eyes. He was looking up at the heavens, and so obviously he was very emotional and was very good friends once upon a time with Eddie Guerrero. So certainly you can understand why. But the Inner Circle pick up the win. He beats Dan Lambert to get the win exactly the way I said it would play out. That's the only reason Lambert was in this match, was to take the losing fall and look like an idiot. So they got, you know, to the point that they needed to get to in the end. But that spot on the lion salt, that looked really bad. Outside of that, I thought this was fun. I thought it was fine for what it was. I just think it's very stupid to have a match like this. And, you know, at the beginning, you have guys who are out on the apron just waiting patiently for the tag, you know. Get in the ring and start beating each other's ass. I mean, it's a street fight, right? Anything goes. You're not going to be disqualified. This has been a feud that's been going on now for a while. It's like a very personal, deeply personal thing. Just get in the ring and fight. And if you're concerned because you have another match on the show where you're already doing it, like I said, don't book the same kind of match on the same show. It's very simple. But I thought it was fun for what it was. Then it was special announcement time. Tony Schiavone was out on stage. And he was there to introduce the newest addition to the AEW roster. I know a lot of people were probably very upset. They were waiting for Wyndham Rotunda. They were waiting for Bray Wyatt to make his AEW debut. Wyndham Rotunda is filming a movie. Wyndham Rotunda may well end up in AEW at some point. But if you were expecting him to be on the show, well, you deserve to be disappointed. Because he was not going to be on the show. Nor was I expecting him to be on the show. However, Tony Schiavone introduced us to the newest member of their roster. Jay Lethal is officially part of All Elite Wrestling. Jay Lethal is now All Elite. He walked out to a remixed version of Pomp and Circumstance. Sadly, he was not dressed up as Black Machismo, but he came out to his music. And he becomes the first Ring of Honor star to defect since this whole announcement about Ring of Honor going dark and basically shutting down for a few months after their final battle pay-per-view next month. Anybody with a contract that ends at the end of the year is going to be released from their contract. Any contracts that end next year will be honored until March or April, so those people will be held for a little bit longer. But within the next few months, everybody is basically out of a deal with Ring of Honor. They're basically shutting down for a while. And they were going to assist any talents in trying to be booked elsewhere. I don't know if, I mean, they would have had to have probably let him out of his contract early to make this happen, but he is the first, he will not be the last. But Jay Lethal does become the first Ring of Honor defection since that announcement. Jay Lethal is somebody who should have been a much bigger star than he was. And he had a great run in TNA for a while. He fell out of favor with certain people there. I remember when that all went down. And when Jay Lethal got released from Impact and how confused he was. Even to this day, I'm not sure he really knows why it happened. But he fell out of favor, I believe, with certain people who were in power at that time. And he ended up spending the majority of his career ever since in Ring of Honor. And he's had a lot of great matches. Jay Lethal is a tremendous wrestler, but Ring of Honor has always been under the radar, especially during the Sinclair years. They've always just been under the radar. You don't really hear a lot of people talking about them all that much. His career is a product of that. You don't hear a lot about Jay Lethal because you don't hear a lot about Ring of Honor. So as talented as he is, I still say that he should have been a much bigger deal than he was. This is going to be the biggest platform of his career, I think, even bigger than TNA. This is his big break, and he's been in the business for 20 years. And he's really getting his, for all intents and purposes, this is going to be his big break. He challenged Sammy Guevara to a TNT title match this Wednesday on Dynamite. Sammy came back out, right? He was just out there for the street fight. He came back out to confront Mr. Lethal, and he accepted his challenge to make it official. So they will meet for the championship coming up on Wednesday. That is not the only match that they announced for Dynamite coming up on Wednesday. This was the other announcement. They just kind of threw it out there like it was nothing. But if you are a New Japan Pro Wrestling fan, you are very excited for this, because on Dynamite this Wednesday, it is going to be The Butcher and The Blade taking on Orange Cassidy and one of his new friends from New Japan Pro Wrestling, making his AEW debut, Tomohiro Ishii. The Stone Pitbull is coming to AEW this Wednesday. Very excited to see Ishii. Ishii is fantastic. Ishii is one of those guys, when I look at him and I think, how is this guy never held the IWGP Championship? I've said the same thing about Suzuki. I think he probably still could have a short run with it, but Ishii is someone who, I mean, he should have been the man, at least for a little while, you know? So to see him coming in, now with Orange Cassidy in the match, it may be more comedy than anything. I don't know how they're going to work this, but Ishii on Dynamite is pretty fucking badass, because he's stateside right now, as is Okada. Now, we knew Okada was not going to be on the show tonight because he was wrestling Buddy Matthews in the Battle of the Valley out in California. And I haven't actually checked to see how that match was. I'm looking forward to reading up on that. But yeah, Ishii coming to Dynamite on Wednesday, at least for one appearance. So very excited to see him on the show. And finally, we get to the main event of this show. Kenny Omega defending the AEW World Championship against Hangman Adam Page. This has been a storyline that has been playing out for more than 2 years, a two-year story arc. For all the people, again, who say that AEW is all random matches and no story, you just show them this match and the story building up to it. You don't have to like the story, but to make a comment, as I've seen some people make, about how, well, it's all just random matches and moves and dives and there's no story. You know, these are people that don't watch the show. They don't like AEW, which is fine. And you could certainly levy certain criticisms if you don't like the product. Absolutely. But to say that there's no story makes no sense. And you clearly have no fucking idea what you're talking about. So I can't take people like that seriously. Show them this match. And this is not the only story, but this has been playing out for a very long time. This was the culmination of this story here tonight. These two met 1 year ago on this show in the finals of the World Title Eliminator. Omega won that match. He went on to turn heel and win the championship from Jon Moxley a few weeks later on Dynamite. Don Callis got involved early. He grabbed Page's foot for the distraction. Omega clobbered him from behind and took over from there. Outside the ring, he rammed Hangman back first into the barricade a couple of different times. Omega hit the Terminator dive out of the ring onto Hangman. Inside, he went for a second rope moonsault, but Hangman got his feet up and then caught Omega for a fallaway slam. Then he nailed an elbow suicida to Omega on the floor and then followed that up with the Orihara moonsault, which always scares me when I see him do that. He gets some height on that moonsault. Looks great, but I always fear one day he's going to come down and just, you know, snap his ankle or something. But Hangman hit a sheer drop brainbuster for a near fall. Omega came back with a brutal-looking Liger Bomb off the top rope. I mean, he folded Hangman up right. I mean, just folded him up neck first. He just fell over. Followed that up, back-to-back Snapdragons, third Snapdragon, this one out on the apron. So he's working over the neck at this point. We got our first V-trigger of the match, followed by a one-winged angel attempt, but Page countered out of it. Omega spiked him with the Tiger Driver 98, got a very close near fall. Hangman hit an avalanche blockbuster off the top rope and then came off the top of the ring post with a flying lariat to Omega, who was on the outside. I guess he was out there seeking refuge. And he came off with that crossbody clothesline, took him down through the table. I think it might have been the timekeeper's table. It was one of those tables draped in the black cloth or tarp or whatever. So they went through the table. It was around here, I think it was right before this, that Hangman had come up bloody from the top of his head. He wasn't bleeding like Punk was, but he came up bloody. I didn't see exactly what the spot was that caused it. So Hangman, it's Omega in the ring. He's going for the buckshot lariat. Here we go. We're going for the big finish here. He's ready to hit the buckshot lariat, but Omega collapses. Maybe he senses that this man is waiting for him. Omega collapses, and Hangman gets back in the ring. And he goes for a V-trigger. He's going to hit Omega with his own V-trigger, but he misses. Buckshot lariat connects, but with the referee. Not with Kenny Omega. Omega pulled Paul Turner in the way, and Hangman Page wiped him out. Caught in the crossfire, this poor referee. Don Callis grabbed the AEW championship. He goes to strike Hangman with it, but he got caught, and Hangman decked him. Kenny tried to hit him with the belt, but Hangman ducked and hit the deadeye. Aubrey Edwards sprints down to the ring to count the fall, but Omega kicks out. So Omega hits the V-trigger. Page comes back with a rolling elbow, and he wipes that Omega with a wicked lariat. It looked great. Omega comes back with a backdrop driver. Hangman hits one of his own. And Hangman hits Omega with the one-winged angel, and Omega kicks out. So, we actually did have somebody kick out of the one-winged angel. His name is Kenny Omega. I stand corrected when I said that nobody is kicked out of the one-winged angel. I had forgotten that in this very match, Kenny Omega basically no-sold his own move. So he kicked out. So at this point, the Young Bucks walk out. They're walking down to the ring very slowly. They have these conflicted, you know, looks on their faces, like they don't know what they're going to do. And they're staring at Hangman, and Hangman is staring back at them. You have one Buck on one side, the other Buck on the other. But they don't do anything. They don't interfere. They don't try to help Omega. They just stand there. It's like they're just contemplating whether they, you know, what should they do. This man used to be our friend until we fucked him over. Page hits a buckshot lariat to the back of Kenny's head and finally hits another buckshot lariat. This one head on, takes his head off. One, two, three. Just like that, Hangman Page is your new AEW World Heavyweight Champion. He didn't kick out of the one-winged angel like I thought he would, but he won the title with the buckshot. Finally, Hangman has reached the top of the mountain. I thought it was a very good match. What about 25 minutes? It was exactly the finish that they should have done. So, you know, some people who thought, well, they should drag it out longer, they should delay it, they should wait. No. Tonight was the night to do it. Everything was building to tonight, 1 year after he lost to Omega. He comes back and he beats him to win the championship. I mean, the story just sells itself. And now he gets to go to, I think they're in Norfolk this Wednesday for Dynamite. It's his hometown. He could have the big hometown celebration to celebrate his big title win. And we'll see if we get a segment with him and the Bucks. You know, what's going on there, right? Now we have story. That elusive story that apparently AEW doesn't do any of. We're going to get more story on TV this week. The bigger story here is Omega on his way out of the Elite. Does he quit the Elite because, you know, the Bucks came out and they didn't help him? Does he get kicked out of the Elite the way Adam Cole was kicked out of, you know, Bullet Club or whatever it was many years ago? Is Adam Cole the one who orchestrates Omega's exit from the group? And then Adam Cole ends up bringing in Kyle O'Reilly if he ends up leaving and coming to AEW. There's a lot of different ways that this could play out. A lot of different ways this could play out. If Omega leaves the group, you got, again, the Kyle thing is still hanging out there. Is he going to leave NXT and come to AEW and reform Red Dragon? What does the future hold for Kevin Owens? You know, is Kevin Owens going to leave and come to AEW? And he's obviously had history with these guys too. It's a lot of moving parts here. This could go any number of ways. But we may be seeing the end of Kenny Omega in the Elite. He might be booted out soon. And also, Bryan Danielson is now the number one contender for the AEW World title. So the only question is, when do they do the match? I can't imagine them holding off until Revolution. So that has me thinking big Dynamite, winter is coming type of show in December. Or their first quarterly special on TNT is coming up on January 8th. Don't forget, January 5th, Dynamite moves to TBS. That Saturday, they're having their first TNT special. They're going to have four of them next year. This is like their Clash of the Champions or their Saturday night's main event. It's probably going to be about an hour. I don't know if it's going to be live. It would have to be live. I mean, if it's not live, then I absolutely would not do this match on a tape show. But maybe they hold off until that special. And they do Hangman one-on-one with Bryan Danielson live on TNT, a big Saturday night special. But the match is coming, and I think that's going to be a big win, big credibility win for Hangman Page, because I don't see Danielson winning the championship. I think they're going to have a great match. I think Danielson at this point is incapable of having anything other than a great match. But I think that it'll be a win to boost Hangman that much more by being the first man to hand Bryan Danielson his first singles loss in an AEW ring. So I enjoyed that main event. I enjoyed the show overall. This was an excellent show, top to bottom. It had its weak moments. It was not a perfect show, but this was an excellent show with a 90-minute stretch to open that you will simply not find anywhere else. And a very satisfying conclusion to the story that they have been telling now for quite some time. So let's see what you guys thought of the show, because as I said earlier, we have a Twitter poll going at Solomonster. And we've got about 91% of you voting thumbs up. You give Full Gear 2021 a thumbs up, 6% thumbs in the middle, only 2.8% thumbs down. So that will go down as one of the best scores for any pay-per-view this year, for any company, WWE or AEW. And I would have to agree. Very, very strong show here for AEW here tonight. So, at Solomonster, if you haven't voted, I'm going to keep the poll up for a few more days. And we'll see what the final results say. So, follow me on there if you are not already doing so. Don't forget also that tomorrow here, I'm going to get into your super chats, but don't forget that tomorrow is episode 730 of The Sound Off. So we have a lot to cover on the show tomorrow as well. The work never ends. We're going to have to wrap up our work in the morning, and then we will record episode 730. 730 shows. Can you believe this? 14 years. Of this podcast, 730 main shows, God knows how many other shows, and reviews and recaps here on YouTube, those aren't even counted in that number. So, and I see we have a ton of super chats here to get through, so I have to thank all of you for the support here. Holy shit. I have to thank all of you for the support here tonight. Here we go. We got to backtrack all the way to our buddy B. Vincent, who dropped a $50 bomb before I even went live tonight. So I have to say thank you to our good buddy, Mr. Vincent. Thank you for the 50 spot. Said he missed the first hour and 15 minutes of the show. That was the best part. He missed the first hour and 15 minutes. Or I'm sorry, first 15 minutes. I thought that said hour and 15 minutes. He missed the first 15 minutes. Due to Bleacher Report not working, and I placed the order yesterday. Instead, I used ExpressVPN to watch it on Fight. Says, never using Bleacher Report again. Thanks, Solomonster. Well, you are very welcome. I tell you guys every week, I mean, they're a sponsor for a reason. A lot of people have found ExpressVPN very useful. I'm a user of theirs as well, and we have a code right down in the description down below. It's always there if you check down below, expressvpn.com/Solomonster. Use our link, because not only are you going to help the show, if you sign up for a year, you're going to get 3 extra months for free. A lot of people use ExpressVPN to watch this this event, because for whatever reason, they have issues with Bleacher Report. Now, me personally, I didn't have any issues with Bleacher Report tonight. I was a little concerned. I enjoyed watching it on Fight in September. I was kind of pissed that this show was not on Fight this month. So I didn't have any issues. I know some people did, though. Some people had some real problems with Bleacher Report. So, but don't forget, that link is always down below if you want to use it. You get 3 free months. Naif Al-Safar, thank you for the $4.99, brother. And Dorenzo. Love CM Punk's new trunks. Great match, and Eddie Kingston will be AEW World Champion in the future. I don't know about AEW World Champion, but he will get a big win one of these days. And like I said, the world will rejoice because they all want to see Eddie Kingston do well. Joshua Carlos Ocean Man, having tag rules in a street fight is just dumb. I agree. Del Fuego with the $5. I was the guy in all white that you saw at ringside all night. Well, there you go, the guy in all white. I don't remember a guy in all white. I wasn't paying that close attention because I was taking notes. So I don't remember the all white guy. But I definitely noticed that Cody solve racism sign. Joshua Carlos Hangman against Danielson is going to be great. Cannot wait. Yusef, FTR are incredible. Literally a cohesive unit. One of the best teams in the world. I think as much as people do praise them, I still think they're underrated. They're the kind of team they would fit in literally any era of wrestling. You could drop them in the 60s, you could drop them in the 70s, you could drop them in any decade, any era, and they would fit right in. The Gilf Lover. Didn't watch the show, but glad I can hear and watch your review. Keep it up. Great work. Chris Williams, thank you for the $4.99. Great show, but feel like every match had a flat finish, even the main event. I wouldn't say every match. I mean, there were some matches where the finish fell flat, for sure. I would not say that was every match or even most matches, though. Colin C. just became a Sound Off Superstar, one of our brand new channel members. Everybody welcome Colin. Welcome to the family. Yes, Brock Lesnar guy. Brock Lesnar t-shirt guy was in the, I think, front row with green shirt guy. They have defected from WWE now. They have spread over to AEW. I noticed them in the crowd. I noticed Issa as well. Shout out to Issa. NYC Demon Diva got some screen time tonight. She was rocking out to Fozzy, Judas. Anthony Madrin, happy 14th anniversary sound for the Sound Off. Listen for 8 years now and look forward to listening for another. P.S. MJF showed tonight that he is more than just a TV 14 Miz. The Gilf Lover, so I know you got Elevation and Dark on YouTube, but do you see AEW adding a third television show with maybe 2 hours, i.e. SmackDown, Raw, and NXT? I hope not. Personally, I hope not, because I just think it would be overkill. So, no, I don't think they need to. Citizen Strife with the $10 super chat. Cody and QT stopped by my store as a thank you. They gave me lower level tickets to Full Gear. I was treated to an amazing show. All Elite fan go. Well, that was a very nice thing for them to do. Now, I rag on QT on the streams and everything, because his television character for me is like death. But I've heard nothing but positive things about him, and Cody too. You know, Cody, again, he's getting shit on by the audience. I think he should just embrace it. Maybe it's going down that road. Maybe this is kind of the slow burn to a heel turn. He said that he's not turning heel. He doesn't want to. I take him at face value, but I think he should. I think he should embrace it. But, you know, I have no issues with Cody. Quintus Brown, great show tonight. Hanger did it. Hanger? It was nice to meet you last night at House of Glory in your dapper blue suit. I got two great nights of wrestling. Yeah, I got to meet Quintus last night. It was very nice meeting him, and I was in my dapper blue suit. I was joking. I walked in. I said, boy, you know, this isn't SmackDown. I thought I was coming to... I looked like the fucking SmackDown general manager last night. I could have probably done a better job than them, too. But yeah, we had a great night at House of Glory, and we're going to have another great one next month. Malakai Black is coming in. It's going to be a lot of fun. Probably back on Fight TV as well, so... You could probably go and watch the archive version of last night. I know some people were saying that there were audio issues, or they could hear me and not JD for some of the matches, but that's on Fight's end. Hopefully that'll all be fixed and resolved by next month. But yeah, we had a blast last night. Fire Panda 007, great show tonight. Congratulations to Hangman for winning the AEW title. Jay Baker, amazing show. First few matches went too long, but Punk against Eddie and Paige against Twinkle Toes gave me all the feels. Hashway, thank you for the five. Hope you had a good time at Hog. I haven't watched the pay-per-view yet, but I bought it on Fight. Hangman winning the belt is like Bryan winning it at WrestleMania 30. Well, I was at WrestleMania 30. That felt different to me than this did. I mean, if you're an AEW fan, I guess you could say this would be the equivalent of that, just in a smaller building than when Bryan won it. I don't want to compare the two. That was very satisfying in a different way, and on a much bigger scale, because you had 75,000 people losing their minds and the confetti falling down. But for AEW, this was the babyface, you know, finally winning the big one that has. Has eluded him for two straight years. Alvin Johnson, Eva Marie is a better wrestler than Bleacher Report is a streaming service. Had to watch the show off my phone. Bullshit. Wow. Eva Marie is a better wrestler than Bleacher Report is a streaming service. I cannot think of a sicker burn than that. That is quite the insult. King Bling Blah, I'll give AEW a pass on a five-hour pay-per-view because they only do four of them a year. Is it time to do six a year every other month? All Out was 4 hours. I would not mind them increasing the number of pay-per-views. They don't need to do one every month, but to do six in a year and maybe bring the length of these down just a little bit, I think would be helpful. Because you did have some burnout. There's no doubt about it. Not just watching it here, but even the fans in the building. I was listening with my own two ears. You could tell, you know, that there was a definite burnout there. So, yeah, I think six would be a good even number. Magician Sapphire, another fantastic pay-per-view from AEW. All four of the pillars of the company shine brightly tonight, especially Hangman with the big win. Anti-M Bishop. What's going on, Mr. Bishop? Hog, born again, kicked ass last night. Full Gear was epic. Eddie would have loved it. 2021 has been wild. Where the fuck I am? With the $4.99 Super Chat. You're on the Solomonster channel. No QT Marshall tonight. Solomonster definitely crying himself to sleep after the stream while clasping a framed photo of him. Well, somebody better get working on that Super Chat. Or that Photoshop, I should say. It's the Wolverine meme. Quintus Brown, we got to give Kenny Omega his flowers. Great title run. Yes. You know, we actually should acknowledge the fact that, you know, Omega had a a very nice run as the champion. I would even say better than the run that Moxley had. Obviously, it was longer. But he had a number of great matches as the champion. And he was hurt for a part of that run. You know, he was nursing injuries. He had a shoulder tear early on. Actually, when he won the title, I think, a year ago. He was dealing with a shoulder injury. You would see him, he would be on TV sometimes, he would have cupping marks on his back. That's a therapy that some people use to heal from injuries. I don't know how effective it is. I've never been cupped before. Or spooned, for that matter. But yeah, I mean, he does deserve, I think, credit for going out there and having a hell of a run, which has now come to an end. Fire Panda, I'll try not to end the stream on a low note like last time. Pinky promise. Well, as long as you don't mention a certain someone, then it won't put everybody in a bad mood. Tony DX94, since Cody's bad promo, do you think they are booking a heel turn, or are Cody and Tony pulling a Vince on refusing to see the way the tide is going? I think that Tony Khan understands his audience well enough that there has to be some kind of payoff here. They see the reactions, they hear the reactions, they're not blind and deaf and dumb. But ultimately, it's up to Cody. I mean, if Cody really does not want to turn heel, then I guess he won't turn heel. But this feels to me like, you know, it might be a slow burn into a heel turn. Griffin Sabe, right guy won the main event, but the match never took off to me. The ref bump was a mess, and the ending with the Bucks was a huge miss. Disappointed. Mr. J33352. Solomonster, you, me, and good mic work need to meet up at a WWE or AEW event. All three of us are big Bret Hart fans. He is my favorite wrestler of all time. Well, we should meet up with Bret Hart. We should get Bret to join us. I would love to interview him here on the channel. Let's make it happen. Hey, Chris Manson just joined us. Good morning, Chris. Here at 1:45 a.m. on the East Coast. Stephen Feast. I watched with a bunch of non-fans, and they are left saying how much fun they had. Tonight was a perfect night for AEW. The Comedic Genius. Do you recall a match that ended in commercial on TV? Yeah, we had one actually just a few months ago, didn't we? I think on AEW, in fact. I mean, unless it was a WWE show, I'm almost positive. Maybe it was a WWE show. But we just had a match within the last few months. I think over the summer that ended during a commercial break. Somebody in the chat, remind me of which show it was. Powerful One with the $10 super chat. How ironic that Eddie Guerrero was a great heel, loved being a heel, but eventually became an amazing and beloved babyface. MJF could very well head down that path. I'm telling you, he's going to make a great babyface, whether he wants to or not, at some point. All the great ones do eventually. Simi Valley, dropping a pair of $10 super chats. All right, so I have everybody in the chat reminding me that it was Orange Cassidy. So it was an episode of AEW. There was an Orange Cassidy. That's right, there was. There was an Orange Cassidy match that ended during a picture-in-picture break. So I guess technically it was on the screen, but it was during a commercial break that the match ended. But Simi Valley says, Solomonster, thanks for another great show. Would love to see you do another one with the Soup Guys like you did years ago. Yeah, I love the Soup Guys. Mish and Joey. Shout out to them. It was just Mish's birthday, in fact. I think it was yesterday. Wished him a happy birthday. He also says, AEW, hands down, has the best tag team division in wrestling. Would love to see the Briscoes join that crop of teams. That's exactly what I was planning to say, I think, on the show tomorrow. But, yeah, the Briscoes in the AEW tag team division seems like a no-brainer to me. Plenty of teams for them to work with. And they'll be available soon. Right? And they're working GCW. I mean, they're working the Hammerstein Ballroom for GCW in January. There's no reason for them not to come in and at least work a few shots with AEW. I don't see why that wouldn't happen. Griffin, so I'm not all negative. Darby MJF was straight fire. Maybe the match of the year. Great build, great match, great heel finish. It's why I love wrestling. Roderick Welch with the $10 super chat. What a pay-per-view crowd. Was hot all the way through. AEW does not disappoint. I would rather Miro won, but can't complain. Junior Dos Santos hitting a moonsault made me pop. Match of the night was Darby against my man MJF. The Gary Sphere. Great show. Agree with Mark Henry that talent needs to start following the show so we don't see the same stuff all night. Middle fingers, biting, Eddie moves. Well, I mean, I'll cut him some slack on the Eddie stuff. I mean, just because Chris Jericho was going to do an Eddie Guerrero tribute spot, I don't think that should, you know, prevent other people from wanting to pay tribute if that's what they want to do. Mr. J is dropping five. Let's change up the music a little bit here. Mr. J, buy or sell 93 Bret Hart versus 97 Eddie Guerrero at SummerSlam, or 97 Shawn Michaels against 98 Rob Van Dam at a WrestleMania. I would go Bret Hart against Eddie Guerrero at SummerSlam. You serve that shit up, I'll eat that all night. Sounds good to me. Jack Lopez, with all respect, I'm not an AEW fan, but I think a brand split and a secondary world title would help. What do you think? No. No secondary world. Just think about what you just said. And thank you, by the way. But on that second point, think about how wrong it is. A secondary world title. There should never be such a thing. There should never be a world title that is considered secondary. It goes against what a world title is meant to be. This is one of the reasons why all the titles are weakened by even having a brand split. At least, though, if you book it strongly, you can still have two respectable world championships. But there should never be a secondary world title. I don't think that AEW needs a brand split. I think they have a lot of talent, and the roster is certainly growing. I think they just need to do a good job of, or a better job of managing talent. Rotating them out. Not everybody has to be on the show every single week unless they're in an active angle. It's fine to have somebody show up and then maybe take a week off and then pop up on Rampage the week after and then take a week off and pop up on Dynamite unless they have an active story going on. You know, unlike in WWE where they have a brand split and they still have people who fall through the cracks like Tony Storm. I saw some report online today from some wrestling website that said, the reason that Toni Storm is not on television, it's not because they forgot about her. Toni Storm is going to be just fine. It's just that, you know, she's not factored into the Survivor Series. And so, therefore, she's got no story. It's not her time. It's not Toni time. And I would understand that. She's not factored into the next pay-per-view. Okay, that would make sense if the woman wasn't called up in July. It hasn't been Toni time in about 4 or 5 months. So don't give me that shit that, oh, well, she's not on the pay-per-view coming up. That's why she's not on TV. Well, then how do you explain the 3 fucking pay-per-views that came before this one? Give me a break. The people who make excuses for some of the dumbest shit are the ones that really annoy me the most. What a stupid fucking thing to say. Oh, it's just not her time. It hasn't been her time from the moment she got called up. Why was she even called up in the first place? It's not her time. Maybe next year it'll be her time. Maybe next summer it'll be her time. WWE has a brand split and still can't manage their roster. AEW does not need a brand split. DHV Smoking Trees. Yes, I know. Toni Storm was on SmackDown yesterday. That is correct. What does that have to do with the point I just made, though? She's on TV this week. She won't be on TV next week. Let it play out, says Oni Loco. Of course. That's what they'll always say. Let it play out. Let it play out. We'll let it play out. We'll give it 6 months. We'll let it play out. DHV says, why not have an act of God cost Miro the match? So what are we talking, like Final Destination type stuff? Fucking, like the lighting rig falls down on him in the middle of the match or something? Ryan Spies' match of the year was me against the parking ramp at the Target Center. Fire Panda, where is Bulu? Well, Bulu's here. In fact, Bulu just dropped another super chat, so we will be hearing from Bulu shortly. We have a lot of Bulu Fatulu fans here in the live chat. Bulu is with us. We've got another super chat here. Big love from Dubai, the one man show. I'm telling you, the sound off is worldwide, man. We got fans all over the world. Thank you, Dubai. The cheeseburger, 666. Fun fact, Kenny Omega is the first wrestler to kick out of the One Winged Angel in AEW. Now that Jay Lethal is all elite, who else in Ring of Honor would you like to see in AEW? Well, we were just talking about the Briscoes. I think Danhausen would have easily been, on AEW television very, very soon, did he not break his leg. So he's going to be gone for a while. Once he's all healed up, I think we'll be seeing Danhausen on Dynamitehausen. But look, I mean, there's a lot of very talented guys. You know, you got a Jonathan Gresham, and you've got Brody King and Roosh and people like that. But, you know, you don't want to bring them all in at once, right? So Jay Lethal is in. The Briscoes, I think the Briscoes will be in. Maybe they come in next. And maybe they just stagger it. And they, you know, Tony Khan has 3, 4, maybe 5 names in mind. He's not going to bring the whole roster in, but, you know, you kind of stagger their debuts. Those are some of the names I would look at. Quintus Brown, since the Elite lost tonight, do you see Cole taking over the Elite similar like Triple H took over DX after WrestleMania 14? The Bucks and Omega need time off television, in my opinion. Yeah, to go back to the point I made about Omega's health, you know, if he needs time off, like Shawn Michaels needed time off after WrestleMania 98, maybe he doesn't get booted out. Maybe he just disappears and they have somebody else kind of step up as the main face of the Elite. Very possible. There's a lot of different ways they could go with this. If they want Omega to go babyface or disappear and then come back as a babyface, I would boot him out of the group. Maybe Don Callis turns against Kenny Omega, right? I mean, again, we don't know. We don't know what direction they want to take things in. Fire Panda 007. Cody just going around not realizing he is a heel would be more entertaining than a full-blown heel turn. Jared M. dropping $30. Shout out to Jared. Showing some love. Longtime wrestling fan. Old school wrestling fan. Is Jared. I'm sure he enjoyed the show tonight. Scott Woodford just got home from the show. Great show. Scott, I saw you tweeting earlier. Tweeting me. He was at the Target Center and he enjoyed the show tonight. Bulu Fatulu, keep or delete the Napoleon Dynamite dance or Ocean's 12's laser dance? I don't think I ever saw Ocean's 12. I'll go Napoleon Dynamite. Austin Sanders, so many former NXT alum and former NXT champions on the show. Triple H created stars, all right, just not for the company he wanted them to be stars for. Nobody creates more stars in AEW than Triple H. That is true. That is very true. Bulu, Solomonster, I asked Keon Kimura how good was the Solomonster on his insights on music. He said awesome. You know, you mentioned that the other week. I don't know who that is. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that person or their show. I probably should be, because that's the second time I know you've brought that up. But give me a little more information here, so I can check. Maybe I do know. Maybe that's... I don't know. Is that the right spelling? I don't know. I need some more information. Quintus Brown, BTE, should be a must-see on Monday. Hulu fought Hulu. Solomonster, I am now an American citizen. No longer a citizen, and it feels great, dude, trailblazing and freaking amazing. I am now an American citizen. Well, citizen. But no longer a citizen. That's kind of contradictory, but... Is it MMA? Okay, that could be why. That could be why. I was thinking, you know, when you mentioned the name, I'm thinking, is there a wrestling YouTuber by that name? And because I feel like I might have heard the name before, but not like wrestling. I'm like, what wrestling YouTuber? But now people are saying it might be MMA, so that could be why. I'm getting confused thinking it was a wrestling personality. But anyway, he says he's now an American citizen, so congratulations. Everybody cheer. Bulu Fatulu. He is now a spitizen of the United States of America. We love you, Bulu. We love you. Fire Panda, we must acknowledge the great Bulu. There we go. Bulu Fatulu. He's got fans. And Fire Panda, again, thank you for the five. Deontay Soignier. That's how I'm pronouncing it, because I think that's a very classy way of pronouncing it. Deontay Soignier with the $10 Super Chat. Solomonster, I love your show. You're a world champ personality to me. I want to take this time to wish my good broski Spencer a happy 2 years sober. I am so proud of him. Love you, Spence. Well, congratulations to Spencer on 2 years of sobriety. That is awesome. I salute you with my water in my mug. That is very cool, though. Thank you, Deontay. Bulu says, Panda is the greatest. And again, he's mentioning this other YouTuber. Fire Panda, LOL, that is awesome. Is there like a conversation going here in the Super Chats? I'm like, they're ignoring me. They're just having a conversation amongst themselves. Scott Woodford, pop-up toaster, invited in Minnesota. Fire Panda, we have to challenge for the AEW Tag Team titles now. Bulu. Griffin, can we please get an Ethan Page singles run? He is so damn good. Outside of MJF, probably the best heel prospect in the business. Ethan Page is very good. Ethan Page, look, he got himself in the best shape of his career when he came to AEW. And, you know, he has... the ability to cut promos. His work is solid. So he has all the tools, I think, to be bigger than just a tag team guy. So I think a singles push will come in time. Right now he's doing the tag thing with Scorpio Sky. There's nothing wrong with that. Hanging out with Dan Lambert is getting him more television time than they were getting when they were just Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. I would keep that. If I were Ethan Page, I'd want that to keep going as long as possible. Bulu says, Fire Panda is my inspiration. Fire Panda says, and you are mine. We have like a relationship budding here between these two. You guys need to get a room. You need to take some of that Super Chat money and check into the local motel. Mean Mark AWA with the $15 Super Chat. Just got back from Full Gear. Had an amazing time. My voice is shot after the Hangman win. EJ Slam, fun show tonight. Yesterday, I watched the WWE documentary on the AWA. Since the show is in Minnesota, so buy or sell on which territory made a bigger impact on the wrestling business? The AWA or WCCW? I'm going to say AWA because you look at the talent that Vince McMahon plucked and raided from that territory. Hulkamania was born in the AWA. Hulkamania didn't become a thing when Vince McMahon brought him into the Northeast. He blew it up into something much bigger. But Hulkamania was created in the AWA. And they had Andre, and they had Ventura, and they had Okerlund, and just all these different people, and David Schultz. So those guys were part of the core that made up that golden era of the WWF when they really went national and the whole expansion happened. if a lot of those guys didn't, you know, kind of get over or first gain notoriety in the AWA and get noticed there, who knows, you know, what those early WWF days in the mid 80s when the expansion happened, who knows what it would look like. So WCCW was also a very influential territory and very, very successful. And their television show, I think the look and feel of their television show influenced the way a lot of television shows later looked in other territories as well. But I would go with AWA. Bulu says, Panda, I'm with you. We can be the new LOD. I am your animal. You are my hawk. Okay, this is getting weird. This is getting very weird. Fire Panda, oh, what a rush. Hugh Jazz with the $4.99 super chat. Who would you turn Punk heel? Also, do you think AEW has pacing and match order issues? I would not turn Punk heel yet, so the answer is no. I do think that the pacing can sometimes just be too frenetic, even just on the television shows. So yes, I think that sometimes it's better to just slow things down a little bit, not to a crawl, but I do think they have pacing issues sometimes. I would not turn Punk heel yet. Bulu with the $5. Thank you, Bulu. And Mordo 887, lethal against Cole on a big stage excites me. Yeah, Jay Lethal has no shortage of people to work with on this roster, so Sammy Guevara is a hell of a first opponent for him. And you look up and down, hey, Jay Lethal against Brian Danielson. I'm sure Danielson would love to work with him. Off Leather Wings, why is WWE 10 years ago still considered modern? Are they considered modern? I don't think I ever said that. Tuxedo T Servo, thank you for the $5. And Griffin, no, 4 pay-per-views a year is perfect. So he is not a fan of the 6 pay-per-views a year concept. Quintus Brown, Jonah Rock is all New Japan. That sounds like All Japan and New Japan just merged. Did something happen tonight that I'm unaware of between those two companies? All Japan and New Japan is now All New Japan. I assume that Bronson Reed is now at New Japan. If that is the case, I think that's a great fit. I think that's a great fit. But that's the first I'm hearing of it. I have not checked any news yet. I went right from the pay-per-view to streaming with you guys. But if he is with New Japan, I think that's a great sign-up for them. Jeremy with the $5. A couple of weak moments, but overall a great show tonight. I've listened to you for years, but this is my first time donating. You've become my go-to. Jeremy, I appreciate that. I am happy to be your go-to, and we're here every month. In fact, we're here every week. Every Wednesday for Dynamite, every Friday after Rampage, and sometimes we do other special streams, and of course, I'm sure you know, the main show, main audio show on Sunday. We do an episode 7:30 tomorrow, so I hope you tune in. Bulu, keep or delete. Moonwalk at the Oscars or Dougie at the MTV Music Awards. Teach me how to Dougie. Nobody ever taught me how to Dougie, so I'll go with Moonwalk at the Oscars. Scott Woodford, this was a mini tribute show because of the anniversary of Eddie's death in Minnesota. Yes, we talked about that during the review. Bulu says, eat a cookie with the Cookie Monster or eat gummy worms with Bert and Ernie. Cookie Monster. Of course, who doesn't like cookies? Mr. J, what do you think about an NWO invasion style involving the women that were let go recently from WWE and Ring of Honor? Just women only, he says. Invasion angles are so played out. I wouldn't do an invasion angle. There's a lot of talented ladies out there who I think are going to be signed. I think you sign them, you debut them. I don't think they need to be debuted together. I don't think they need to be debuted as some sort of angry female group. I don't think we need any kind of invasion. I think the whole invasion thing has jumped the shark. Jackalope Music on Rampage. Jungle Boy got a nice reaction on a suplex pin. He kept it locked in. It looked like he was going to go for another one. Buy or sell on a jungle variant of the Three Amigos. Welcome to the jungle. I like the way you think. That's very clever. I'm down for that. Guns N' Roses might have an issue with that, but I'm okay with it. But then again, Tony Khan can just buy them off. Mr. J, I think the Owen Hart Cup of AEW can be their version of the King of the Ring. Have one once a year. Who will win the first one? Can't tell you because I don't know who's in it. But Tony Khan said coming out of Full Gear, he would finally make some announcements about the Owen Cup. So I think this week coming up, we're going to learn some information about the Owen Hart Memorial. So we'll have to wait and see. I can't tell you because I don't know who's going to be in it. I have no idea. Don't even know how many people are going to be. Is it going to be 32-man bracket, 16-man bracket, 8-man bracket? We don't know. Hey, Nir Rof from Israel, dropping love. What's going on, Nir? Hope you're doing well. Quintus Brown, it would be dope if Cody turns heel, uses his VP power to get a title match, and beats Hangman to become the AEW champion. Everybody would hate him more than MJF. Well, everybody would hate him, although I think it would probably be... I don't know if that would necessarily be in the best way. I don't know. I don't know about that. It would definitely get him heel heat. I mean, look, if you're going to go all in on a Cody turn, it's something to consider. But he has been adamant about this whole, I'm not going heel, I'm not going back on my word, I'm not going to get a championship match. It comes down to whether or not you believe him or not. Colin C., 2022 predictions, MJF next TNT champion. I'm calling it. I don't know. I feel like he could do better than that. Liquid Sharingan. Two AEW complaints. The commercial soon as the match begins. And the dives through the ropes every other match. But I love the AEW product. Deontay. Yes, man, you did get my name right. I did. All right, cool. Very cool. Mr. J, Triple H or Shawn Michaels going to AEW is like Hulk Hogan signing with WCW since AEW is going to hell anyway. Wow. And as I said to Nir, it's good to hear from you, man. So we are all caught up now on your super chats. Believe. Yes, we are. Told you I'd read them all. I am a man of my word. We got another one. Look at this. Turtlehead. Turtlehead saving the best for last here. Turtlehead didn't see the show. Was Tony's leaked list true to form? No, he has said that he admitted recently that it was him just scribbling down potential matches. Because at first he kind of denied it and said, oh, people are reading too much into it. Then he later on said, yeah, I was just kind of scribbling down possible matches. One of the matches that was listed was CM Punk against Wardlow. So we got CM Punk against Eddie Kingston. I think most of the other matches pretty much came true. That might have been the only one that didn't. So it was pretty true to form. Christian Trahan. Drop the super chat here. Let's see what Christian had to say. Almost every AEW world champion has had a lengthy title reign. Would you continue this trend with Hangman Page or have him lose the title sooner rather than later? I would want to give him at least... I mean, I wouldn't give Hangman any less than 3 or 4 months. I would say get him past Revolution. And depending on who he drops it to and what the story is, if he were to drop it at Double or Nothing in Vegas, I would be okay with that. It depends on who he drops it to and what is the story behind it. Like, what is the whole kind of plot? Is it MJF? Is it Adam Cole? Is it CM Punk? Is it Cody or someone going heel? But he's got to at least get through Revolution. He's got to get through one pay-per-view, I think, as the champion. But then if he drops it after that, I would be fine with it. But it's got to be the right story, and it's got to be to the right person. I would not take it off him in 6 weeks. I would not have him lose it on television next month. Fire Panda, was this the best pay-per-view in AEW history? I don't know. All Out was a very strong show. This was also a very strong show. If it's not the best one that they've done, I would think it's top two. It's up there. And Jamin John, is The Rock against Benoit at Fully Loaded 2000 an underrated classic? Yes, it is. That was the same show where we had Triple H and Chris Jericho in that fantastic Last Man Standing match. Rock and Benoit, they had like the faux finish with the restart. They thought Benoit won the title. He really did. It was like a dusty finish. Yes, that was a, I would say that's an underrated match. It doesn't get talked about enough. Frost757 in the chat. He's been a channel member, Sound Off Superstar, for 6 months. Why aren't you? Thank you, Frost. He said that excellent main event felt Sting versus Hogan at Starrcade 97, but done correctly. I was going to say, where are you going with that? So, yes, he said that was Starrcade done the right way. Yes, I agree with the people in the chat. I said earlier in the stream, he is not losing it to Bryan Danielson. Him beating Danielson will give him a very big name. It'll be a big feather in his cap when he beats him. I don't expect Danielson to beat Hangman Page. Yeah, we have a few people in the chat who agree, who think All Out was probably the better show. But, you know, back-to-back pay-per-views at this level, at this caliber, it's been a hell of a year for AEW when it comes to their pay-per-views. You know, I've always said, no matter what your criticisms are of the product or of the company, you know, Tony Khan knows how to put together a show that people, you know, his fans want to see with big matches or a big main event. And when it comes to a lot of their opening matches, right, they open really strong. Sometimes they go a little too hard, one right after the other, and you just got to take a breath. You know, it's too much. They could burn the crowd out. But their pay-per-views largely deliver. I mean, I think it was it All Out last year during the pandemic? There was a show that was not one of their better shows. I think it might have been last year's All Out. I think most or all of their pay-per-views this year have been excellent. I feel like I get my money's worth when I plop down $50, because I'm so used to just not paying for WWE pay-per-views. You know, I pay for Peacock, but their pay-per-views have no value anymore because nobody has to really pay for them. You kind of get used to it. So when I have to shell out $50 for a pay-per-view, I can't say that I've had an AEW show where when it's over, I feel like I was, you know, cheated out of my money. So they give you, I think they give you a good bang for your buck. No pun intended. Armed Anderson. Hands up. Fire Panda. Oh, we just talked about Fire Panda. Well, we got more super chats coming in. Let's not miss anybody. Bulu Fatulu, who has the best powerbomb in wrestling history? That's a very interesting question. My first instinct is to say Vader, because he literally broke some people's backs with his powerbomb. Which is pretty shitty of him to do, but I would not want to take a Vader... I almost said a Vader panda bomb. I got panda on my brain. A Vader power bomb. You know whose power bomb I liked? I liked Sid's power bomb. Sid would just pick you up and hold you up flat and then just drop you. But I always thought it looked good. Diesel, the jackknife. One of my favorite power bombs, this is like a totally random thing to even talk about here, but one of my favorite power bombs was a power bomb that, I don't want to say it was botched, but he lifted Bret Hart up at the Survivor Series in 95 after he lost, right? So Bret Hart rolled him up and Diesel was pissed and the camera zoomed in on him and he said, you know, motherfucker. And he got up and he picked up Bret and he was just probably full of just adrenaline. And he picked him up with such force that when he slammed Bret, like Bret's body turned in midair. But it just made this great thud when he hit the mat. And these are the old WWF rings, which were like fucking concrete. So like they had no give to them. That is my favorite powerbomb, I think, that I've ever seen delivered. And it was by Kevin Nash. So go figure, right? So if we're talking like individual powerbombs, that one that Nash gave to Brett at the Survivor Series is probably, I just thought it looked cool. But thank you, Bulu, for the question. Fire Panda, one more shout out to my brother, the great Bulu. Kenneth Burton, what if Hangman drops it to Okada since the Forbidden Door is open and we have Danielson against Okada at All Out? Well, that's just the definition of fantasy booking. I think the Forbidden Door being open is a great thing, and I think we are going to see Okada in AEW. We are not going to see, I think, Okada come in and win their world championship. Just, it's logistically, it's just not, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. Mr. J says, I mean NXT is going to hell. Okay. I wasn't sure what you meant in that earlier super chat. NXT is not going to hell. NXT is hell. It's already there. Bulu says, big shout out to Fire Pandas for acknowledging me. God bless him and his family. Huge Jazz, buy or sell story-wise, Batista turning on Evolution or Hangman's run to the title? Hangman's run to the title was a much longer story that had different twists and turns in it. It was the better story. I enjoyed the Batista story too. I mean, he got over in a way that they didn't expect. Remember, the WrestleMania main event in, I guess that would have been 2005, originally was going to be Triple H and Randy Orton. And they kind of blew their load on that in the summer. And then Batista got over super huge, just organically. And it took on a life of its own. I enjoyed both stories, but the Hangman story, you know, was, it had a lot of chapters and a lot of layers to it over a longer period of time. I'd probably go with the AEW story. Jake, with the $6, just woke up in the UK. Great to see you still live. Thanks again for the great content that you produce. The GOAT. Thank you, sir. Liquid, do you think Hangman turns heel if he has a long title reign? No, I don't. Quintus Brown, match of the weekend. Red against Will or Page against Omega? I'm a little biased in this. I got to call Red against Will Ospreay last night. And that was a hell of a match. If you didn't see it. I don't know if I could answer that objectively. Plus, I was there live for that one, you know, so I felt the energy of the crowd. Here, I was watching the show on, you know, on a laptop. It's a little bit different. Honestly, the better match, Red and Ospreay would get my vote as of those two. I think of the entire weekend, I probably would go with Darby and MJF. But of those two, I think I'd go with Red and Will Ospreay from last night. Mr. J, I got to proofread Solemn Monster. I love AEW. LOL. I'd be rushing and excited to talk to you about wrestling. It's good to be excited. I'm glad that you're excited. I want you to be excited. I don't want you to be here and be bored. Come on. Although this budding relationship here with Panda and Bulu has me a little on edge. Jamin John, why The Rock lost back-to-back WrestleManias from 99 to 01? He is the most over babyface who lost to a heel, Triple H, which is unheard of at that time. I honestly think the only reason that happened is because Stone Cold was not ready to be back on television. He wasn't cleared, whatever the case may be. They really wanted him to be there, I think, when Rock won the belt from Triple H. So they delayed it. I mean, WrestleMania that year was really Backlash in 2000. Backlash 2000 was WrestleMania that year. That's the only reason The Rock lost to Triple H at WrestleMania 16. Fire Panda, Solomonster, I must thank you because it's your stream that brought me and the great Bulu together. Well, I'm glad that you made a new friend. I am glad. Jackalope Music, channel member here for 8 months. Says, shout out to Jared M. He is easily in the GOAT monster fan conversation. Absolutely. Now people are talking about McRibs. I don't want to hear about McRibs at 2:30 in the morning. That's just fucking disgusting. Never had a McRib. Never had any interest in having a McRib. Lionel Oliva, AEW WWE Dream Match. Serena Deeb against Becky Lynch. Buy or sell? That word dream match gets thrown around a lot. It's not a dream match. I think it would be a very good match, though. Not a dream match, but it would be a very good match. Kenneth Burton, what's going on, Kenneth? Thank you for the $4.99, Kenneth. Since Okada and Danielson won't work, what if the Dark Order slowly turns on Hangman and Bray Wyatt comes up to challenge Hangman for the championship? I don't like that idea either. If he even comes in, I would not be pushing Bray Wyatt to a world title match. AEW has enough established names and young talent in that company who should be in contention for that championship. And I did this on one of my members-only Q&A videos. Because if you're a member of the channel, one of the perks you get every few weeks, I pump out a couple of parts of a video Q&A answering your questions. We just talked about this on one of the recent Q&As. I mapped out the next 2 years' worth of what the AEW world title picture could look like. I'm not going to get into it here. It's in the video. But there's more than enough names to occupy the world title scene without having to bring in another WWE guy and throw him into the main event for the championship. Now, him being aligned with the Dark Order, I think that could work if they wanted to really take the Dark Order down a really dark road and not just have them be a joke group. But, you know, putting him in the world title scene, I don't really like that idea. Nayef, have a good night, sir. He says it's 10:25 in the morning here. Great stream as always, and the match from Hog yesterday was awesome. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Nayef. Thank you for your PayPal earlier. Thank you for all your support. And we'll have a new podcast at some point tomorrow. I'm going to bed late. I have no idea when the show will be up tomorrow. Probably late in the afternoon, but you'll have a podcast coming your way tomorrow. So thank you. Thank you for all the support. This has been fun. It's always nice doing a stream when we have a great pay-per-view. So I enjoyed the pay-per-view. An excellent show from top to bottom with the right outcome and the right result there at the end. And I'm going to be back with you, obviously, tomorrow. Episode 730 of the podcast will drop at some point. So watch for that. That'll be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, all the usual platforms. I'm going to be back with you live on Wednesday for AEW Dynamite. Ishii is coming to Dynamite. Tomohiro Ishii will be wrestling on TNT on Wednesday night. Very excited. Plus, Jay Lethal challenges Sammy Guevara for the TNT Championship. Could be a title change, maybe. He's all elite. He's in the company, so we may well see a title change on TV this week. We'll see. But I will be live with you on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, because Wednesday we have Dynamite. Thursday I'm planning on going live 14-year anniversary stream. So you come hang out here on the channel with me. I'm going to answer your questions, email questions, super chat questions. We'll do Survivor Series predictions. That'll be Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Friday night, live after Rampage. We'll take a break on Saturday. And next Sunday is the Survivor Series. And I'll be live after that pay-per-view as well. So you got a lot of content coming to the channel here. A lot of content coming to the channel. Dr. NXT Scorpio says, I enjoyed the show. Great review as usual. And those main events, the climber fell off the cliff, sadly. And Nick Garza, what do you think is Kane's best bitch or best... Jesus Christ. It's getting late here. What do you think is Kane's best match? Kane's best match. Kane's not really known for his great matches, but I think he had a really good, I think it was for the U.S. title match on SmackDown back in 2001 against Kurt Angle. I remember that being one of his better matches. He had a great chain match with Triple H at Judgment Day back that same year. 2001, actually, was not a, might have been his best year in ring, quite frankly. I might be inclined to go with one of those two matches, to be honest with you. Wasn't really a fan of that TLC match that he was part of on Raw in 02. That was the night where the whole Katie Vick storyline started. I didn't think that was one of the better TLC matches. Lita was his, yeah. I misread that question. Ryan Spies, you get the last word. How long until Okada money clips Matt Hardy? When he comes in, I do not want to see Okada using the money clip. He needs to get rid of the money clip. You know, if he had a Ridge wallet, he could get a money clip or a cash strap. And don't forget, you get 10% off. Actually, it's 15% if you wait until after Wednesday. The discount gets even better. You get 15% off your Ridge wallet when you use our link, ridge.com/solomonster. I'll put a link in the description. So show some support for the show. Show our sponsors some love. I'm getting you guys some money off these great products. I got 4 Ridge wallets of my own. I use them every day. Every day I go out, I use a Ridge wallet. They're great. I love it. Anyway, thank you for the support. I will see you tomorrow for episode 730. I'm tired. I got to get the hell out of here. So have a good night. And we'll do this again for Survivor Series next Sunday. Come on back. Until then, see you later.